Okay, some of the points we're going to mention today may be things that you've heard before, but I think we're going to try to bring them together, different pieces that you may be familiar with that come together in an important set of connections. The Malbim, it's not Malbim exclusively, but the Malbim provides one definition for the word Kedusha, what it means in the Torah. Again, others offer a similar approach, but I think it's going to be a springboard for a few concepts that we can try to cover today. The lesson of the Malbim is as follows. I'll read to you in Hebrew. Kedusha, he ha precious vasnasus mikol darkei achomer vateva al inyonim nafshim elokim givoim v'nalim mikol inyonei habasar. So, first thing to realize, we mentioned just tangentially the other day, that when the Torah says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kadosh, right? Next week's parasha, he demands of us to be Kadosh as well. Ki Kadosh ani Hashem Okecha, right? Kadoshim Tiyu, you should be Kadosh because I'm Kadosh. And if you think about it, if you pay attention to davening, for example, we make a big deal out of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kadosh, whatever that means. Again, you can ask a kid, is Hashem holy? And they'll say yes. It doesn't mean he understands what the word holy means. We say Atah Kadosh, V'Shimcha Kadosh, right? So there's this great emphasis on Hashem's holiness. What does it mean to be holy? And whatever we're going to attach to that description of Hashem for our interpretation has to also work to be practical for us in some way, okay? In order for it to be a viable definition of Kedusha. So he says, Kedusha means precious, separation, okay? And hisnasus, like kisisas rosh b'nei Israel, means to lift up, right? So it doesn't just mean to be separate. You can be separate, you can have some people over here, and have some people over there. Then you can have some people up here and some people down here. The difference between separating one way or the other is elevation means that it's not simply being in a different place. It's a separation that breeds a higher existence. So Hashem being Kadosh means that he exists on a plane that transcends. You know what that means, to transcend? I mean, it goes beyond. It's working in a different stratosphere. It transcends called Darkei HaChomer VaTeva, all natural forms of natural order, all systems of existence that we're used to in the world, that most organisms and most elements of creation operate in. Hashem is above all that. Hisnasus mikol Darkei HaChomer VaTeva al inyonim hanafshim elokim givon v'nalim mikol inyonei habasar. All those things, everything that transcends whatever is part of natural order, mikol inyonei habasar, is by definition going to fall into a different category of inyonim nafshim, elokim, things that are of a spiritual nature, things that are of a divine nature. Anything that's spiritual, anything that's divine. What that means is that it rises above human existence, natural existence. V'yesh b'kedusha madrigas rabos. So just to illustrate a few things, there are some different levels of Kedusha that we can just label or list as follows. Yish misnas al koach ha-mis'av al-arayas machal sasuris. Can have a person on one level be able to rise above koach ha-mis'av al-arayas, the drive inside of a person for arayas, for food that he's not supposed to eat. Can have a much greater example. Yish misnas al-frosh m'kol nani ha-chomer m'shal osov kol nos ha-olam ad yia kivei elkim, kivei elkim. You can have an individual like Reb Chaim Kanievsky. How can I ask, he used to daven? This is crazy. Obviously, he davened to remember Torah. Davened to remember Torah. He learned something. He said, Hashem, please help me remember. We should all do that, right? Atachonin l'adam das. One thing that's included in that bracha of atachonin l'adam das is to remember. Now, people like myself with a poor memory, I have to daven not just to remember my Torah, but I have to remember to, you know, I daven also just remember the things that are important in life. Sometimes I make that tefillah not just for the practical purpose, but because this is an avoda, it's important to remember things that pertain to other people, because that's one of the ways that you show them that you care. When you reach out to a person, you speak to someone about whatever it is, or you just bump into them and you say hi, you know, and you say, how's your mother doing, right? Because you heard their mother wasn't feeling well, right? Or, you know, last time you spoke to them, they were under pressure, they missed year, you know, they were preparing for a big project or a test or a job interview, and, you know, their whole schedule, right? But the next time you see them, if you're just like, hi, how are you? But you've totally disregarded the emotional burden that they shared with you previously. So, again, it's not necessarily insulting. Some people will be insulted by it, but it's also an opportunity, regardless, to to demonstrate how much you care about that person, if whatever was on their mind is still on your mind, because it's probably something that's still hovering in their conscious to some extent, right? So, and especially if somebody you haven't seen in a long time, you know, oh, so how did, you know, that, you know, that job you were, you took over the summer, how'd it go? Or, you know, whatever it happens to be. Yeah, but it takes effort. And a blessing of good memory to be able to remember the things that relate to other people, so I'm not just self-centered, not just thinking about myself. So you have to daven for that also. What was unique about Reb Chaim was that he davened dafka not to remember things that were not related to Torah. He was on a level where his interest was not just to be matzliach in Torah, but to literally negate and disregard and push out anything else that could possibly serve as a distraction, because his whole life was about Torah. It reminds me of a word I heard from a Talmud of Moshe Twersky, Twersky's brother, who was killed in Har Nof a number of years ago. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. Okay, you can say this over on Shavuos. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, right? Famous Rashi. Chazal say Vayichan Sham. Klaiso camp by Har Sinai, but it's a Loshon Yachid Vayichan, not Vayachanu. So Ki Ishachad B'Lev Echad. Everyone was united. It was a Loshon Yachid. Achdus is necessary for Shukav Al Satorah. That's one of the reasons why we work on our Midos. The Yud, the Mem Ches Kinyanei Torah, but also the loss of Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim, Shulam Nagu Kavod Debezeh. Not just that they died because it was a punishment. It's that in order to receive the Torah, in order to be a Kli Kibul, in order to be a receptacle for Torah, a person has to first be Machshir himself. He has to first create a persona with good midos that has respect for other people in order to be something where the Torah can reside. So, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, the necessity for achdus. Rav Moshe Twersky had a different pshat. He said the emphasis on the other half of the pasuk, neged ahar, they were encamped opposite the mountain. That means that their back was turned to the rest of the universe. That the ability, maybe you need both. You need the achdus to be mekabel Torah. You need to have the achdus between you and other people, but also the singular focus. The people who are able to shut out distractions while they're learning are the people who are going to be most masliach. And you see that in Israel also, right? The guy who's going out couple times a week, guy who's, you know, always in town, like, okay, you know, he'll grow from his Israel experience, but then there's that guy who after a couple months really settles down and buckles down and isn't checking the scores, you know, in football season, you know, and he's learning and we see it with our own eyes, right? You don't need a Musar Shmuz. The people are more focused. You know, the Chovos HaLevavos gives a simple mashal. He says it's like a glass of water. Glass of water, and you put a little stone inside. So some of the water is going to be pushed out if you add some other mass into the volume of the cup, right? So Torah is like that also. Ruchnis and Gashmis. I think that's actually what he's addressing. The more Gashmis you put in, the more steak and taiva for food that you know you put in one ear. So a little bit of Ruchnis is going to have to be pushed out the other ear by definition. So Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar means they were all camped facing the mountain, because you need to turn your back on everything else in order to be matzliach. That's a big yisod. So Reb Chaim Kanievsky davened. He did not remember phone numbers. He did not remember his own, you know, like social security number, the zehut, the number, mispar zehut in Israel. That's the equivalent of your social security number. So he didn't remember his own whatever it is 8-9 digits number, even though he could, you know, calculate the most intricate and sophisticated gematrias from, you know, entire psukim. But like, if he didn't need to know it, he said, it's taking up space. That's dead space in my brain for Torah. Okay, so you know, when you have that attitude, you appreciate how someone like that becomes such a gadol. So that in that type of person is a new level of disregarding hanos ha'olam. He did not know what he was eating. He saw what was in front of him and was able to make a bracha rishona. But by the time he finished, he had to ask the people around him, what did I eat? Because I don't know what bracha to make. Meaning it was just so off his radar. His brain was in a different place. And he was ingesting the food for the sake of, you know, got to stay healthy. I need my energy to serve Hashem. I need to keep my body going. But what it is, it's such a muscle for us. I have to say, I'll just pause the recording briefly. Okay. He's listening, okay?
I'm listening.
All right, maybe we shouldn't shut off the recorder, but this will turn it back on. The last mission in Gittin, saved by the recorder. The last mission in Gittin talks about, I guess, for lack of a better way to describe it, like when it's okay to get divorced. And it's machlokes b'shil and b'shalamet. Okay, yeah, all right. So some reason, like certain Mishnayos, people know by heart, okay? Listen. I'll read it to you. The Mishnah is on Daf Tzadi. Mamish, the last. You turn the page. It's the end of the Masechta. Okay. Daf Tzadi. Beishamay Omrim Lo Yigarish Adam Es Ishto Elim Kein Motzabod Dvar Erva. Beishamay says you should never divorce your wife unless you really discover something very, very inappropriate about her. Dvar Erva. She's hanging out with the wrong people. You suspect maybe she's not behaving the way she should. Okay. You know, something very drastic, extreme, but we understand why that would make a lot of sense. Shenemar Ki Motzabod Erva's Dvar. The pasuk already indicates that that would be a reason why we would expect there to be divorce. Beisil omrim afilu hekdicha tafshilo shenemar ki motzuba ervas dover. So Beisil says even if she burns the cholent, she's a bad cook. I don't know. He's not satisfied with her cooking. That would be a reason to divorce her. Very, very surprising, right? Now listen to this. Rabbi Kiva Omer, afilu motza acheres nohe meno. Even if he finds someone more beautiful than she is, that's a justification for divorce. Shenemar, he has a pasuk. V'haya imlosim tochein ve'inav. And it shall be if she does not find favor in his eyes. And Rabbi Kiva understands that to mean, if he finds someone who he thinks is more attractive than her, then he should divorce her. Is this?
Or does it just mean that you're already looking outside your marriage, so it's already open?
Oh, okay. So let's put it like this. Simple pshat, this does not sound like the Musar Shmuz you'd expect to get. Yaakov Kamenetsky, let's go back to Basil for a second, and the bad cook, it's not that it's justified to divorce your wife over her cooking or over what she looks like. Chas v'shalom comparison, so a person marries a woman, he doesn't look at anyone else. There's no one else in the world. That's his attitude. I think Akiva's on the right track. If you still even notice, if it registers on your radar, if it bothers you, if you let it get to you, what the cooking, whether she burnt the cholent 1 week or whatever, so then the underpinnings, the commitment and the necessary connection that's there, if it's so tenuous that it hangs on whether the food was well done or wasn't well done, if it's so, we'll say, disrupted or distracted because I can find someone else who is gonna catch my eye, so to speak, and that's going to diminish my appreciation of my own wife, then there's some major problem over here. And that's already where we're teetering on, we're encroaching on the realm of divorce. Again, I think Basil and Rabbi Kiva, if we understand the mission like that, are saying like, you gotta rein things in, you gotta get things under control. That's not how you're gonna have a successful, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years, Mir Hashem, of a home together. But If that's on your radar to such an extent, then there's a major problem over here. That's the idea. And that's all I'm trying to say. It's true in Shalom Bayis, in the same way it's true in your general picture of Ruchnius. You need to have good priorities. If the things that matter to you are the things that are materialistic, that are superficial, then you're going to have a lot more heartache than you're banking on. Yeah, you see.
I thought the burning food part, I thought that was the shoe guys on purpose.
Okay. All right, meaning you're saying there's already some sort of contentiousness.
Yeah,
I hear.
Okay.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It doesn't sound like that. It doesn't sound, especially, you know, flowing with Rabbi Kiva, but okay. I'm not negating that pshat. This is, I think this works more with the pasha pshat. But okay. Okay, so keep that in mind. So the point of the Malvim, let's wrap this up. The point of the Malvim is that a person striving for Kedusha, by definition, is rising above the normal, natural order. To be closer to Hashem, and the same way Hashem is not bound in any way by natural order, by the way that our universe operates, because Hashem created the universe, and He can dictate its rules, and He can break the rules. Man can also rise above the rules, so to speak, that drive every other part of our world. Just some of the examples He gives, you can look at your environment and understand that there's certain details, certain conditions in the environment that can predict exactly what is going to take place. If you drop a ball from a certain height, so if you know the right mathematical equations and formula, you can figure out exactly how long it's going to take based on how much it weighs and where you are, how long it will take for the ball to hit the ground, right? There is a precision in science. If you look at plants are also like that, right? Based on the environment where the plant is growing, how much sunlight there is, how much rain there is, and the nutrients in the soil, you can make a pretty good guess as to how it's going to develop, if it's going to be successful. It's not going to be successful, because when all the pieces are monitored, when you're supervising the details of the cause and effect, then you know what the outcome is going to be. In the realm of animal, the animal kingdom, so animals, they don't think, they're not decision-making beings, humans, that right? Humans are the only ones who have koch habechira. It's not a coincidence that we associate the koch habechira, free will, as something which is divine also. Many Rishonim, many Mepharshim say when the Pasuk says that Hashem created man, B'tzelem Elokim, right? So what does it mean? I look like God? God doesn't look like anything. That's one of our basic beliefs. Hashem doesn't have a form. He doesn't have a body, right? So what does it mean? I'm in the image of Hashem. So it means that I share certain characteristics. Hashem endowed me with certain characteristics that only He has. One of those characteristics is the ability to choose, free will. That's one shot in Tzelem Elokim. Hashem can do whatever He wants, and He gave us that ability. Animals don't have that. They have certain impulses. They have certain reflexes. And when the conditions are such, if we can narrow down the particulars in the environment, we can predict how the animal is going to respond to a certain type of stimulus because it's programmed like that. Humans are the beings that you can't always predict. You can take a good guess, but in the end of the day, the human can surprise you. You can have military experts planning out the outcome of a war, but if there's someone on the other team who has a better strategy, then you'll outsmart the enemy. Right? That's how strategy in wars play out. That's why one side can beat the other. If you can outthink the other one and make a decision that he wasn't predicting, right? Or chess, right? That's what chess is. Chess is all about trying to figure out what the other person is going to do. And you can't always do that. You can try, but a human being can make that choice. So when you see a slice of pizza in front of you, what's your reaction? I can say, I'll speak about myself, I'll keep it simple. Someone would put a nice, fresh, hot slice of pizza, talking about like where the cheese is still oozing, okay? It's right out of the oven. He's smiling, he knows what I'm talking about. He spends too much time in Burgers and Grills, so the pizza. Yeah, you see that pizza is put right in front of you. So you can predict the saliva is gonna start flowing, okay? Maybe my stomach's gonna start rumbling, and I feel hungry, and I wanna eat it, right? So that is a moment right there of animalistic response, right? Pavlov's dogs, yeah. We're dedicated to learning Refuah Shleima, Tinok ben Tzivi Ahuva. Okay, grandson of one of the Rebbeim in Yeshiva. Pavlov's dogs, you guys know the old experiment, right? He was able to condition them to respond, right? What he did was, he knew how they would respond to a piece of meat that the dog wanted to eat, right? They begin to salivate. So he started ringing a bell at the same time as they were expecting to get their meat, right? And so they associated the stimuli together, the meat and the bell, and eventually he stopped serving them the meat, and he would just ring the bell, and they started salivating, right? 100%. That's my point. The word is, when it comes to certain things that I do, certain responses, it's 100% as if I'm an animal. The things that you can predict, the responses that you can predict, I am an animal. It actually takes someone superhuman to have that delicious plate of food put in front of them and say no, right? To be able to reject it because, I don't know, Hashem said so because it's not kosher or whatever the reason happened to be. Even to be on a diet, right? How many people fail their diets? Look it up. You know, the statistics of people who are unsuccessful on diets is scary because it just shows you how hard it is to break from your normal behavior. But that's exactly what we're saying. Kedusha means I'm going to exercise the godly element of my being that says I can say no to something even when my body, which is the animal part of me, and the part of the rest of nature, says yes. And when you put that together, if we would just, I guess, up the ante a little bit, then we'll finish in a minute. If you want to up the ante a little bit, now we're coming back to what we're discussing right now. Kedusha, what is Kedusha? Kedusha means arayos. The number one example of how we demonstrate Kedusha, the two things. If you look at the Rambam has 14 volumes in Mishnah Torah, right? One of them is called Kedusha. There's only two topics in that entire Sefer. One, it's three sections, Shechita and Machol Sosuros, okay, which are related points, things you're allowed to eat, things you're not allowed to eat, and Arayos, Yisurei Bia. Those are the only two things that the Rambam captured with the title of Kedusha, because they both are the perhaps the most difficult areas where this is what we're facing. the animal response, which is just my instincts. I have a taiva and I'm going to go for it, versus the ability to rise above that and say, no, I'm like Hashem, like the Malbim said. I'm going to transcend nature and I'm going to make decisions that show that I'm not simply cause and effect, natural response, but I'm actually, it's my neshama calling the shots. And we'll close with a beautiful word, such a simple word, the Sefer HaChinuch. You guys know the Sefer HaChinuch?
Yes.
Okay, Sefer HaChinuch, one of the hallmarks of the Sefer HaChinuch. He goes through, he wrote it as a bar mitzvah present for his son. His son was wearing bar mitzvah. He said, basically what it says in the introduction, says, I see what your friends do all Shabbos afternoon. I'm going to write you a book to keep you busy, help you learn a little bit. Now that you're bar mitzvah, you'll use your time more productively. And he goes through parsha by parsha, talks about all the mitzvahs that appear in the parsha, 613 mitzvahs. And he talks about some of the halachos and when it applies, when it doesn't apply. And he always has what he calls the shorshei ha-mitzvah, the hashkafic, the philosophical underpinning, some of the messages to take from the mitzvah. So this is what he says about bris milah. If you never heard this before, you may have never considered this, and it's such a simple, powerful idea that at any bris milah should come to mind. Ratzalios hashlam al-idea adam. Hashem made us imperfect. You won't actually ask this question, right? Turnus Rufus asked Rabbi Kiva, right? Our favorite Turnus Rufus. He asked Rabbi Kiva, why is it if Hashem is really perfect, so why did he make man imperfect so that you have to finish the job? He gave a mitzvah of bris milah, which sort of indicates that Hashem's creation is not 100%. It's only 99%, right? So the reason why Hashem wanted us to put the finishing touches, so to speak, to seal the deal on the creation of a human being, v'lo baro shalom yibetin, and he did not create him whole and full from his mother's womb. Everyone throughout the Gemara says that there are certain tzaddikim. Moshe Rabbeinu, for example, was born with a bris milah. That's one of the ways that they knew that he was special. Just last week, I was at bris on Pesach, and I met a man, a Baal Tshuva from Israel, who told me he feels very, very spiritually aroused at a bris, because he wants to participate in some way. He wants to do something. Wants to help because he never had a bris because he was born without a bris milah. He was born meaning with without an oral. He already gemalt, as we would say in Yiddish. He already. He had that midah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Every once in a while, a child is born not needing bris milah. You wouldn't do a full-fledged bris. You do what's called hatafas dam milah, a slight incision, a slight drawing of blood. Same thing is true. Let's say you have a ger. You have a person who converts, and he already had a circumcision at some other point in life. So we put a very small incision with a razor, and a drop of blood is drawn. But this individual said he was born not needing a bris milah. And but that's a rare exception. So why?
So, that for the gear, then?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what for, if a gear already had a circumcision.
Saying normally, if he was already born on that level.
Right. You're saying he was born as a non-Jew without the. Okay, so I don't know how often that happens. But yeah, for us, we're not Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't have a right to consider that. I can't tell you who this person is. You know what's truly inside his neshama that he was born with a. The bris milah already, accounted for. I'm not sure what to tell you, but there still is a mitzvah to do something. There still is something. Okay. So what's the reason? Why do we have to do the finishing touches? Lirmos elav, in order to hint, to send the message. Ki kasher tashlam tzuras gufo al yado, in the same way that a person, it's in his hands. It's his job to complete his being and his form, his physical form. So too, it's in his hands, and it's his responsibility to complete Tzuras Nafsho, the form of his spiritual being. It's a very deep point. You have to do the finishing touches from the physical side of things, and that is your mission to make sure that on a spiritual level, you will do the same for your personality, your qualities, your traits, your midos. Your ruchnis need that same finishing touches. And it's no coincidence that the place where that's demonstrated is in the part of the body that is connected to arayos, to show that even in those most difficult areas of kedusha, an individual can make the choice to perfect himself and to rise above human impulse, which we said essentially is animal impulse. There's no difference, to become more godly, to be kadosh, ki kadosh ani, man can become kadosh, like Hashem can become kadosh.